inside to Andre after he set a nice screen for Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley in a hurry lobs to Andre, brings it down, puts it up, and scores it. Nice job by Andre Drummond. Reggie lobs. Andre finishes.
Andre is so active.
Bradley inside for Andre. Another jam for the Pistons big man. Unstoppable, really. This is with numbers. Avery Bradley alley-oops to Andre for a dynamite dunk.
Woo, woo, woo.
And Andre with a step in front, steal, the drive and the dunk. Play of the game, folks.
This is Tobias. He's got Kyrie Irving on him inside. Takes it to the lane, sends it, and scores it.
Tobias turns the corner and jams.
Oh, my goodness, did he ever.
Let him have it, and he hit it. Tobias Harris is rolling, folks.
You know, tonight was just an overall great win for all of us. Tobias had a great night. Avery coming back home to Boston and getting a win here the way we did was huge. We let them know that we're here. We're not going to lay down. When every time they went on the run, you know, we locked back in again. You know, to see Stan actually smile for once is, I mean, that is a very, very uptight guy. You know, he overthinks a lot. You know, he's wants to win really bad. So for us to have this type of success and give him a peace of mind so he can actually relax and not cuss us out every 10 minutes. So it's definitely good that we're playing this well.
LeBron sends it.
Knocks it down. Get out of his way.
LeBron giving some space.
Drains it for three. He continues his assault.
Green takes the young man downstairs into the office for two, like stealing. Here comes Wade. Steps in a long one and cashed it in for three. D. Wade. LeBron James, one-on-one now. Turns inside Covington with the left hand. LeBron sends it. Chased it down, knew it was off, sends it. Just like he planned, that Wiley veteran. A Wangle winner. Another decisive performance for the Cavaliers.
I mentioned the phenomenal, especially on this streak we had. You know, when they made a run at the starters, our bench came in, puts the lead back up, bodies are moving. Again, great shots. Nobody feels like they got to try to take over on their own. It's just a collective effort, man. But I said our bench has been phenomenal, and that's part of the reason why we've turned this early season around.
I wasn't there, nor were you guys. I talked to Aaron Wetzel. He covered this, and he basically said, you know what? If there was any evidence whatsoever that Greg Schiano knew anything about this, I would bury him. I don't know Greg Schiano. I've never met Greg Schiano. I trust Aaron Wetzel. And for everybody in Tennessee, everybody connected to the Tennessee program, from the AD all the way down, to not have a backbone, to not have a spine, to stick by a guy that they chose. You chose Greg Schiano, and then you allowed the fame and the shock jocks and the other people to make you change your decision. What kind of spineless, no backbone thing is that? Tennessee is a program that I thought had a lot of tradition. It's a program that I thought stood for something.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, where we are. Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding afternoon. Thanks for joining us on this Tuesday. We've got 2 hours of scintillating discussion and dialogue, I promise. Coming up in the second hour of the program, at about 4:35, we'll talk about what you heard at the top of that montage put together so expertly by Jim Cushlin. And that would be the Pistons' statement. Can you make a statement this early in the season when it's still November? Is it a statement win? I don't know. But it was a 10-point win. Biggest margin of defeat of the season for the Boston Celtics. The Pistons put one on Kyrie and the boys. What does that mean about the Pistons? What does that mean about the Celtics? It does not mean anything because it's a late November basketball game. While that was going on, the Cleveland Cavaliers continued their longest winning streak in the NBA. Remember, Boston, of course, had that at 16, and now it belongs to the Cavaliers at 8. So that is the that is where we stand as far as the NBA goes at this point in time. We'll talk to David Fernandez in that 4 o'clock hour at about 4:35 or so about the Pistons and what that means and where the Eastern Conference is at this particular point in time. Coming up in more directly, let's put it that way, in a much shorter period of time, at about 3:35, right after the bottom of the hour, local sports center. We're going to talk with a gentleman from RockyTopTalk.com. Terry Lambert is his name. He is the editor, or should say the manager of that site, which is University of Tennessee, SB Nation. Why do we care about UT down there when we got a UT right here? We're Toledo. We're not Tennessee. Why do we care? Well, if you heard Burger McFarland there, just a teeny tiny taste of Burger McFarland, you probably know why. And that's going to be the story that I lead off with this this afternoon here with the monologue, because I got to tell you, I'm very troubled. I'm very, very troubled by what is going on down in Knoxville, Tennessee. Backgrounder on this, Greg Schiano is the Ohio State Buckeyes defense coordinator. Greg Schiano is a former head coach at Rutgers University, also the former head coach for a very abbreviated period of time. Didn't work out so well in the National Football League, but he was a coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, as the top defensive assistant on Urban Meyer's staff, he is, as you can imagine, Ohio State being one of the best teams in the country year in and year out. No different under Greg Schiano. He is still a highly sought after, or at least was a highly sought after head coaching candidate for schools that are looking to turn something around. Greg Schiano, again, just to kind of point out his background, when he was the head coach at Rutgers, this is back when Rutgers was still part of the Big East, when he took over as the head coach at Rutgers, Greg Schiano took a program that was literally bottom of the barrel, bottom of the totem pole. I'm trying to think of, it was a dumpster fire. I mean, it was literally one of the worst jobs that anybody could take in college football. It's one of the worst programs in college football. Rutgers was really, literally an embarrassment. All right? Greg Schiano took that embarrassing program, which had been to like one bowl game since 1980, and went 68-67 with them. Now, you might say, oh, that's not so great. You have to know the depths to which that program had sunk to really understand what I'm saying to you right now. You have to understand how bad they were. To go 500 with them is quite simply, you know, being a miracle worker. They're that bad. Or they were that bad, I should say. Greg Schiano did remarkable things for Rutgers. From 2001 to 2011, he went 68-67, and guess what? He went to bowl games in five of his last six seasons. What does that mean? Come on, you know what that, he was the Big East Coach of the Year. The guy can coach. He can take bad programs or programs that are in a really bad place right now in a state of flux and turn them around. Well, Tennessee is such a school. Tennessee used to be a very prominent SEC program. They have not had, I don't think they've had a 9-win season. They might have had one. I can't recall for 100% certainty. But I don't think they've had a 9-win season since they fired Phil Fulmer. And they filled that job with the likes of Derek Dooley and Butch Jones and Lane Kiffin just for 1 year before Kiffin had his eyes turned and head turned by the pretty girl in the short skirt out at Southern California and said, I'm going to go out there and coach in the USC at USC. And, of course, we know that was a mess. He's busy trying to resurrect his career down in Florida. But anyway, they haven't had anybody, and now they fired Butch Jones after a 4-8 season, the worst season they've ever had. And so they said, you know what, Greg Schiano knows how to build programs up. Let's go and grab Greg Schiano. And the assistant head coach for Urban Meyer, the defense coordinator for Urban Meyer since last season, was ready to go. He and the school came to an agreement. They apparently signed what's known as a Memorandum of Understanding, an MOU, which says, okay, we're going to work out the details, but we do agree to hire you, and you do agree to come to work for us. That means don't take any other interviews. Schiano's part of an MOU is he won't go interview anywhere else, and Tennessee's promise is we won't interview anybody else. We just have to work out the contract language now, which we will do. Now, they did this, presumably, after all of the requisite vetting that a prime college football quite simply any college football program must do, right? Background checks to beat the band. Background checks, previous jobs, previous employers, talking to references, talking to other coaches, former players, personal life information, all of the stuff that that you do to hire somebody for a prime position like this. I mean, they did. And they said, we're satisfied, much as Ohio State had to be. Think about that for a moment. The Ohio State University, which had to fire Jim Tressel over some illegal payments that his players received during that entire Tattoo Gate scandal that we are all very, very well aware of that preceded Urban Meyer coming. You better believe that Ohio State did every bit of vetting that they needed to make sure that they're not hiring anybody that's got any dirt in their past or any kind of a history that might be embarrassing to them, right? And they said, yeah, Urban. Urban Meyer wanted him. They vetted him and said, Greg Schiano, come on down. And that's why he's the AHC, the assistant head coach, and the defensive coordinator for the Ohio State Buckeyes. So Tennessee did the same vetting and said, yeah, Greg, we're going to do this. Memorandum of understanding ready to go. And now let's go ahead and work out the contract details. While all of that was going on, word leaked, as it always does. It's college football, and there are media sources everywhere. Word leaked out that, yes, the Volunteers were about to name Greg Schiano head coach. And suddenly, that's when it all hit the fan. If you haven't been following it, if you have been following this, and some of what I'm saying to you right now is already known and rather elementary, then my apologies to you. But this is for this is primarily an explanation for those who don't know what's going on and haven't followed it very closely. Students, and in not just students, but some members of the Knoxville community, some other members of the Tennessee faculty, and even some state legislators in Tennessee began a protest, screaming, ranting, and raving at the Tennessee Athletic Department, the athletic director, the school chancellor, the school board of regents, the administration, everybody. How can you even think about hiring Greg Schiano? Greg Schiano cannot be the next coach of Tennessee. Greg Schiano covered up for child rapists. Wait, what? What in the living tarnation are you talking about? Well, come to find out, Greg Schiano was, as part of his previous coaching history, and you look at his resume, Greg Schiano was on the Penn State staff as a graduate assistant in 1990. He was then the DB's coach there from 91 to 95 before moving to the NFL's Chicago Bears. And the story goes that Greg Schiano was named by Penn State whistleblower Mike McQuarrie by way of Penn State assistant Tom Bradley as somebody who may have seen Jerry Sandusky committing a lewd act with a boy and said nothing, didn't do anything about it. Now, this is some very, very deep legal stuff here that we're talking about, and I don't want to overdo it, but I also don't want to pay it short shrift either. I want you to understand what McQuarrie is alleged to have seen or heard, I should say, is what would be known in legal parlance in a courtroom as double hearsay. Double hearsay. He didn't hear from Schiano that he saw something, and then Schiano did nothing about it. He heard from Bradley, who said that he heard that Schiano saw something. Now, in a court of law, hearsay is inadmissible as evidence. Double hearsay, that's where I'm on the stand and I didn't see anything, but I heard from a guy who said he heard from another guy that somebody else might have seen something. It's double hearsay. It's completely inadmissible. It's completely unreliable. And the second individual in this, Bradley, essentially has said that's not true. As well as, of course, Schiano saying, no, I had no idea. Which is one of the reasons why the name Greg Schiano appears exactly zero times in the free report. Now, if you followed the Penn State scandal, as we all did, as our stomachs turned, learning about what Jerry Sandusky did, learning how long he was doing it, as we learned how much Joe Paterno knew and did nothing about it, as we all retched uncontrollably following the development of that story, as we saw Jerry Sandusky on live television being asked if he is sexually attracted to young boys and then pausing for seven long excruciating seconds before answering it, looking to the lawyer to see how do I answer this instead of shouting, no, what's the matter with you? Are you sick? As we all watch that horrendous, terrible, just gut-wrenching story play out, the name Greg Schiano never once came up in the Free Report, the Louis Free Report, which, of course, he was the special investigator assigned to get to the bottom of who exactly knew what was going on at Penn State before the NCAA decided what punishments there would be. Now, the fact that his name didn't appear even once in the Free Report is of great significance. Great significance. Because if you recall, when Jerry Sandusky was arrested and taken down, of course, for these unspeakable acts of violence and perversion against young boys who were at Penn State camps, and Joe Paterno was taken down with him for not doing anything to rein in his sexual predator and good friend, Jerry Sandusky, they were after everybody they could get. Investigators, prosecutors, they wanted everybody who knew anything to be taken down, with very good reason. If there was a quarterback's coach who knew, if there was a ball boy, somebody who washed the towels after practice, if anybody knew anything and didn't do anything, they wanted them taken down. This was a case where, quite frankly, I believe a strong case would have been made and could have been made, and in fact was made, for the death penalty. Penn State football should have been killed. There should not have been a program. Should have been wiped out, everyone fired, all scholarship players released to sign with other schools for a period of time. How long was the SMU death penalty back in the 80s for recruiting? Back when they had the Pony Express of Eric.
Oh, Kirkland, gosh, I was just watching this like a week ago again. It was like they were out, there was no program for like 2 years, yeah. I want to say, and then they were allowed to come back.
Right, and I think didn't they have to come back like on a smaller scale? They couldn't automatically jump up to 85 scholarships when they
right.
Came back.
Right, yeah, I got to look up exactly something what the numbers like were, but it was something like that, yeah.
The death penalty plus is what I'll call what should have been handed down to Penn State, in my opinion. But they went after everybody. And despite trying to take down everybody they knew, there was nothing on Greg Schiano. Because there was nothing but double hearsay that he once may have seen something. Something that he personally denies, and that the person who was quoted by another person on the stand also denies. And that's why his name doesn't appear. That's why he was never charged. That's why he was never accused, even, of being part of the cover-up. They wanted anybody and everybody who had anything to do with the cover-up. Schiano was not part of that. But don't tell that to a lynch mob. Don't tell that to a mob of people feeling self-righteous and naturally justifiably protective, because you don't want anybody who actually did help cover up something as barbaric and brutal and horrific as child rape, for crying out loud, especially the institution of child rape, meaning it was going on a regular basis for a period of years, not just a one-time occurrence. You don't want anybody who covered that up. But that does not define or describe Greg Schiano at all. And so Tennessee takes their memorandum of understanding and put it through a paper shredder, all because a bunch of students were outside holding signs and spray painting the giant rock on the campus of the University of Tennessee with the words Greg Schiano, protects, I think was the word. I don't have the rock in front of me, but I've seen it a few times. I think it was protects child rapists. And suddenly the university says, you know what, this guy is just toxic. We are not going to hire Greg Schiano after all. The search continues. Greg Schiano has been absolutely damaged. He will never, ever get another head coaching job in college football or in the National Football League because of what these students and a couple of lawmakers down there in Tennessee did with absolutely zero evidence whatsoever. And because, most importantly, Tennessee backed out of a planned hiring because of the protests of people on campus. Now, two things will never happen. Number one, Greg Schiano will never, because they already vetted him. Tennessee vetted him and found there was nothing to be worried about there and said, this is the guy we want. But people who didn't do any vetting, the sign makers and the chanters outside on the campus, they're the ones who got him not fired, but not hired. They didn't do any vetting. The school did. But then the school caved in. So Greg Schiano is despite all of that vetting, again being done by other potential employers, is never going to get a head coaching job again. You can mark that down. And second of all, the University of Tennessee is going to have one hell of a hard time finding somebody who's not a recent graduate of that university with close ties to ever want to come and apply there. Because now they know that the administration does not run the university. The protesting students do. The lawmakers do. And you know, by the way, Jim Cushlin, who the number one booster for the University of Tennessee is, do you not?
I have a feeling I know where this one's going.
That would be the same NFL owner who actually once considered Greg Schiano as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Jimmy Haslam is the guy, the lead booster there, who was very interested in Schiano as coach of the Browns, decided not to go that direction, but absolutely, I promise you, was instrumental in trying to bring him on as the head coach at the University of Tennessee. And it'll be very interesting to hear what he has to say about all of this. But Schiano is not going to get a job, and nobody's going to want to go to work for the University of Tennessee for quite obvious reasons. Because now they know the administration isn't who they're going to answer to. They're going to answer to the pitchfork and torch crowds outside screaming and alleging that they are hiring somebody who backs, who supports, who protects, who covers up for child rapists. It's not true, and it does not matter. And it's why Booger McFarland went on that rant that we played just a small clip of for you at the top of the show in the montage, and in which I will play more for you coming up a little bit later on. And coming up after the bottom of the hour, Sports Center, we're going to talk about this with Terry Lambert, who is the manager of Rocky Top Talk. Say that five times fast. RockyTopTalk.com. That's the University of Tennessee's SB Nation site. So he'll be coming up next after the bottom of the hour Sports Center. But right now, let's get a wild stat.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
Wild Stat of the Night or Day. It was the night last night by Andre Drummond in the Pistons win over Boston that we mentioned. Drummond, 26, 22 boards, 6 assists, 4 steals. That's a hell of a stat line. First Piston player with 20-plus points, 20-plus rebounds, and 5-plus assists in a game since Bob Lanier, 1977, and only the third NBA player ever with 25 points, 20-plus rebounds, 5-plus assists, and 3-plus steals. The other two to do that, the round mound of rebound, Charles Barkley, and former Sixer star George McGinnis. That is your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. All right, more on the University of Tennessee and this fiasco of a hiring situation with Greg Schiano coming up after the bottom of the hour Sports Center with Kush, right back on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Again, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, it's 3:37 as we roll along right here on the extravaganza. Thanks for being a part of the program. So we're talking UT, not University of Toledo, but the University of Tennessee. And we're talking about the fiasco that happened down there with the near hiring of Greg Schiano. What is the university doing? Are they listening to students, or are they doing their own homework and their own vetting? And what does Greg Schiano do now that his name has been forever poisoned by this very, very sloppily handled situation at the University of Tennessee? The Ohio State, I'm sure Urban Meyer, while he feels terrible for Greg Schiano personally, won't be too terribly disappointed to know that chances are very good Schiano's not going anywhere, and his assistant head coach for the Buckeyes and his defensive coordinator will remain on the staff. Joining us now down in Knoxville, from Knoxville, is the manager for RockyTopTalk.com. That's the University of Tennessee's SB Nation website, Terry Lambert, to try to shine a little light on this very, very strange situation. Terry, thanks for joining us up here in Northwest Ohio. How are you, sir?
No problem. You know, thanks for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. Listen, Terry, I want to start with the University of Tennessee's decision to fire Butch Jones and how they came to the name Greg Schiano. Before we talk about what was done here and memorandums of understanding and then decisions to rescind the memorandum and to go back into the searching pool, tell me what the original plans were. This wasn't the first choice that they had for the Vols, correct?
I believe it was not. I do believe it was near the top of the list. Which is kind of shocking to hear. I really think they had some thoughts about Gruden. I think they went down that avenue. I think they were told no pretty quickly. And then from there, the search kind of turned to Dan Mullen. Mm-hmm. But really, the domino that fell, that made all this happen, was Chip Kelly to UCLA. You heard the reports of Chip Kelly to Florida. That was going to open up Dan Mullen to Tennessee. That didn't happen. So when Mullen took the Florida job, it was apparent that Tennessee had to go to the backup plan. That backup plan was Greg Schiano. You know, John Curry moved fast, probably too fast. I think you can ask why he moved so fast. I don't think there was a large contingent of teams lining up to sign Greg Schiano to be the head coach. So it kind of felt like a panic move from John Curry, and clearly all the boosters were not on board with this. I think a couple were. Reportedly, Peyton Manning was on board with it, who has a lot of pull in the Tennessee program. But clearly, everybody was not on board. This wasn't properly vetted with Tennessee fans. You didn't see that rumor float out a week before to kind of gauge the reaction of Tennessee fans. And man, they revolted. And one thing I wanted to clear up, it wasn't necessarily Tennessee fans that torpedoed this. They were part of it for sure. But it was on every fundamental level. It was former players, boosters, fans, Tennessee politicians, everybody. Just really torpedoed this thing.
Okay. That's a lot to chew on. And I'm going to ask you a number of questions about what you just said. Before I give you my very opinionated questions, let me find out what your opinion is. Were you on board with this hiring, or were you part of those who said, no way, we can't do this?
I could see it from a football side. You can't really argue with what he did at Rutgers, taking that program to new heights. Everybody's going to point to his record of 500, but you kind of got to understand what he did and where he did it. That Rutgers program has never done anything like that before. So from a football, football perspective, it was great. He was highly regarded in coaching circles, but you couldn't ignore the Penn State stuff, and none of that was found. You know, there was no evidence there, but still, it seemed kind of odd for a first year AD to kind of hitch his wagon to someone connected to the Penn State scandal.
Okay. I'm glad I asked that. If you look at the way the protests started when it was leaked that Greg Schiano was going to be the hire, that they had a memorandum of understanding and they're just worried about working out the contract language and everything else, was the pushback from those protesters, and as you said, not all just students and fans, but some highly connected people, boosters, and certainly some Tennessee elected officials, made statements. Were they primarily, and you, primarily opposed to this because the Rutgers job wasn't good enough? He was 500 at Rutgers, and then he sucked in the NFL with the Buccaneers. This isn't the guy to lead our football team. This isn't, as you know, the best that a proud football program like the University of Tennessee can do. We need a better coach than that. Or was it, we think, like you said, from the football standpoint, this is a good hire, but the cloud of suspicion in the Sandusky Penn State thing is what we are all opposed to. Were they willing to accept one but not the other?
I think it was probably a mix of both opinions. Outside of the Penn State stuff, you had reports that players hated him in Tampa Bay. You had him leaking documents on Josh Freeman's health. So, you know, there were some skeletons in that closet. And truthfully, to go from expectations of John Gruden to Dan Mullen and then to get hit in the face with Greg Schiano just an hour later, that was hard to accept. And, you know, you don't want to hear this, but they might have latched on to those Penn State allegations and used that as kind of their scapegoat to kind of fuel their anger and kind of torpedo this. So unprecedented stuff. I can't think of anything like this. And just kind of crazy that John Curry was so tone deaf to it. You would think that he would have some sort of idea that this was coming, but it tells me that proper avenues were not vetted. He thought he was going to trot out Greg Schiano and everybody was going to be okay with it. So just a really interesting
past 48 hours here.
Okay. We're talking to Terry Lambert, manager of RockyTopTalk.com. That's an SB Nation website devoted to the Volunteers. Are you an alum, by the way?
I went to Chattanooga.
Oh, okay.
About an hour south.
Okay, that's fine. Just trying to cover all my bases here with alumni to find out how alumni feel and everything else. Here's the problem that I have with a lot of this. When you said in your very first answer to my questions, Terry, you said this wasn't properly vetted, and I thought, they didn't vet. And then you continued on, and you said, with the fans. And, wait a second. That's a little bit different than vetting
right.
And digging into the background and talking to previous employers and talking to previous players and talking to other assistant coaches and talking to Penn State and on and on and on down the line. I would have to believe they did all of the vetting that anybody would do, that Ohio State did when they brought, when they hired Schiano as their assistant head coach to work side by side with Urban Meyer.
Absolutely.
But then you said didn't vet it with the fans. That sentence kind of struck me a little bit. Is it the practice at the University of Tennessee that if the fans aren't on board, we're not doing it? We're letting the fans make the decision for us, not the expert, football knowledgeable and university knowledgeable administrators that we are, that we're going to let the fans make the decision? If they cheer loud enough for it, we'll hire them. If they don't, we won't? Because that, to me, is a bad, that's a bad message, in my opinion.
It's a slippery slope, for sure. What I mean when I say that is, and Andy Staples of Sports Illustrated had a post on this, and if you can, go read it, it's outstanding. He said, you know, a lot of times they'll float a balloon out to one of their reporters and kind of gauge interest and see how the fans will receive to this hire. So, you know, if you're torn, that you're torn, and you're an AD, you've got to believe in your hire. But when you've got pretty much 95% of the fans were against this, I don't think you can go through with that. And when I say vetting the fans, I just, you know.
Well, hold on one second. Hold on. Where do you get 95%? I know there were a hundred or a couple hundred or whatever protesting outside, made signs. Somebody spray painted the Rock that said Greg Schiano protects child or child rapists or something, which is pretty terrible. And you did have some prominent people, as you pointed out, who opposed it, but you really believe that 95% of the Volunteer Nation was no for this?
Message boards, my comment section, my Twitter mentions, it was ugly.
Okay.
And it was really, really hard to find. I think I found maybe two or three people that were excited for the hire.
You mentioned boosters, and you mentioned that Peyton Manning was on board, and correct me if I'm wrong. But isn't the most prominent and well-heeled financially Tennessee booster, the Browns owner, Jimmy Haslam, he was on board with this too, wasn't he?
He is, and reportedly this was his guy. He was the guy that hired Bush Jones. He was the guy that hired Derek Dooley. Mm-hmm. And supposedly this was his guy too. So there's something to be said about that. And there's also something to be said about why the Browns are what they are right now. So, you know, at some point, if you're the AD, you've got to kind of make your own call. But clearly, Haslam has plenty of pull in that athletics department, and what he wants, he's probably going to get.
Except this, obviously, because he did not get Greg Schiano. So now let's go to the heart of this matter, and like I said, that spray painted Rock, because for me, I have a great deal of trouble with this. I have a big problem with this, as a matter of fact. And, you know, I think Pat Ford was the one who said it the best, or 4D, and I don't know how he actually pronounces his name. But he called this just a debacle of a, and I'm paraphrasing it now because I can't remember, I didn't have it memorized, but a horrific decision and just a complete, you know, a cluster blank in the way this whole thing was done. And what they've done is they've taken a guy's name because he coached at Penn State at the time, and through double hearsay, and as you know, and anyway, listening with an ounce of sense knows, hearsay is inadmissible in a court of law, including the court of law that Mike McQuarrie testified in. Hearsay is not admissible. Double hearsay is doubly not admissible. I mean, it's not like I heard somebody say this. I heard somebody say that they heard that somebody else saw this. He was not mentioned a single time, Schiano's name, in the free report. As you know, the investigation into the Penn State horror, and that's really the best word for it, should have gotten the death penalty in the program, but they were trying to get anybody and everybody who helped cover it up. Anybody who knew something and didn't say anything was on their way down. And yet, Shiano's name wasn't even mentioned in the free report because there was nothing there. Not only did he deny it, Tom Bradley denied what Mike McQuarrie said. And so he was never even a little tidbit on the fringes of this investigation. But now somebody says that, well, there was that double hearsay thing that somebody once said, so now suddenly his name is toxic. I feel like you are the University of Tennessee having this flirtation, having this memorandum of understanding, and then pulling it away from it because of backlash has ended any hope that Greg Schiano would ever have of becoming a head coach in college football again. I feel like that's extraordinarily unfair. What say you?
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Some of the actions that happened on campus Sunday were awful. You know, like you said, just unfounded truths that were put on Shiano's name. Again, I hate to say it, but it goes back to football. And I feel like some of the fan base, not all, some of the fan base latched on to that Penn State report and used it as kind of some ammo to torpedo this thing. And it worked. And like I said, left John Curry with no choice and really made John Curry look really bad.
Yeah.
If you're an AD, if you find your guy, you've done your homework, you've vetted his background, you got to stick with your guy. But in this scenario, again, just the majority of Tennessee fans were not going to be on board with this thing. And he could not go through with it.
Yeah, I think here's a little bit of what Pat Forty wrote that I was talking about before, and he's not happy with Tennessee fans and boosters and alums and others who participated in this destruction of Greg Schiano. He said, and it was very pointed from a, you know, not necessarily normally a carnival barker, Pat Forty. He says, "You people are ridiculous. Not all of you, but the delusional loudmouths who somehow think a program with a 62-63 record over the last decade is too good for Schiano. The internet vigilantes who want to bully their way into running the school's coaching search, the piling on politicians, the protesters, the rock painters, the rubes who are still waiting for John Gruden to slide down the chimney." At the end of the day, is that it? What? Because you said that to me 15 minutes ago. You said they were really had their hopes high set on John Gruden, and then when you find out you can't have Gruden, or even Mullen, to find Greg Schiano under your Christmas tree was just too much disappointment to accept, and so they lost their minds and went off with this ridiculous Penn State story.
I think that's certainly part of it. You look at Tennessee, and they've been absolutely irrelevant for 9 years,
yeah.
Outside of a 5-0 start last year. And you get 9 years of being irrelevant, removed from chasing national titles from the previous decade. And you've got a bunch of frustration. This administration has missed on three straight hires. Lane Kiffin left. Derek Dooley was a disaster. Butch Jones ended up being a disaster. You chased John Gruden. You chased Dan Mullen. You end up with Greg Schiano just an hour later. I can understand the frustration. But again, to trash Greg Schiano's name, that's certainly not something that Tennessee fans should be proud of. But again, they got what they wanted. So it really, really odd dynamics here. Unprecedented stuff. I'm not sure how John Curry survived it. I was fully expecting to hear his resignation on Monday. There's pressure from some boosters to do that, but it hasn't happened yet.
Would you, Terry, press him to do that? Do you think that, and if so, why? Because he flirted with Schiano in the first place? Or because he caved in and gave in to the protests and the internet bullies and everybody Pat Forty just described and let them make the decision?
I think I would have. Just simply because you've done your homework on this guy you feel can lead your program. It's a guy you're going to attach your career to. You know, ADs don't get too many opportunities to hire a football coach. So this was the guy that he latched on to, and he didn't stick to his guns. So whether or not that's on him, whether or not he didn't properly vet the boosters or the fans or the former players or whoever, it all comes back to him.
Terry Lambert is my guest. Terry is the manager of RockyTopTalk.com, an SB Nation website devoted to the University of Tennessee. Tennessee is suddenly the center of the football world. It's weird. We got a committee, the College Football Playoff Committee tonight's going to release the top four as we go into championship Saturday with all the conference championship games. But Tennessee is garnering more attention than probably every other school put together right now. Terry, we'll wrap it with this. Where does Curry turn now? Are we talking, I mean, I said it before, I opined that nobody worth their salt is going to want that job if they know that the administrators who hire them are not committed to them and can have their opinions swayed and thus their jobs on the line by the winds of the, you know, which way the fans are blowing. If the fans are angry and the Bushes are angry and, you know, they're going to run you right out of there. Which is always a possibility in any big-time college school. You got to win or you can get run out. But the point being that it looks like the inmates are running the asylum down there in Tennessee, and the jailers, if you will, or the administrators, whatever you want to call the people with the corner offices, they're pretty much letting the hordes decide things for them. So what kind of coaches do you think they can attract?
I would say the boosters are running the asylum, just to be clear. I think they're still going to be able to land a name, a decent name. They started with David Cutcliffe. That might sound like a nobody to Ohio people up there. Cutcliffe's been a Tennessee assistant for years and years and years. He's never taken a job. He's not going to take the job. Chris Lowe reported that today.
Okay.
So they're going to turn to Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State. They're meeting with him today in Dallas. That's, I think the 247 Oklahoma State site had that. So that's happening right now. If that doesn't happen, look for him to turn to T. Martin, who, of course, won a national title at Tennessee as their quarterback in 1998, currently the USC offensive coordinator.
Who doesn't call their plays, which is interesting. He's an offense coordinator who doesn't call the plays there. You talk about it being a step down, but being a home guy, though, you know, being a favorite because of what he did, as a player, I certainly understand that. What about the Lane Kiffin story? Would they actually consider going back to Lane Kiffin if nothing else works and Kiffin wants to come back and try to smooth over the hurt feelings when he left them for USC?
I don't see it happening. There's just too many bridges burned when he exited. The way all that went down back in 2010, it just kind of burned every bridge imaginable. And there's concerns there. Is he still mature enough? You know, you see him on Twitter still to this day, kind of a fan of Lane. So
actually, I don't know him. Should I? Am I missing a good follow?
You should. It's fantastic. he's really riling up Tennessee fans. He's actually a fantastic Twitter follower, but I'm not sure that's the guy that this administration is going to want running their football program.
Mike Gundy is a damn good coach, and to me, he's done a damn good job with his own alma mater at Oklahoma State. Why would he? I mean, you might be the wrong guy to ask because you're obviously a Vols fan and you're the manager of this website. But is Tennessee a better job than Oklahoma State right now? Because I would have to vote no. Why would Gundy want to leave his alma mater and come over to Knoxville?
Right, Tennessee at its height surely is a better job than Oklahoma State. But again, where it all comes was here. So Gundy has flirted with Tennessee in the past. He turned him down in 2012. He reportedly turned down Florida, just last week. So he's flirting again. Maybe he's just wanting another raise. He signed a new contract in June. So I don't know. Maybe he's hit his glass ceiling at Oklahoma State. Maybe he's tired of being little brother to Oklahoma. But you know, if John Curry falls into Mike Gundy after Greg Schiano, I think that would end a lot of hurt feelings in Knoxville.
Yeah, that would be interesting. I suppose it would. Boy, Mike Gundy enjoys a lot of great support there from the boosters at Stillwater, does he not? I wonder if you'd want to venture into a place where the boosters here, as we just pointed out, certainly made the most noise and enforced the Greg Schiano situation. That'd be interesting to see. So we'll watch and see how that plays out. But Terry Lambert, manager of RockyTopTalk.com and SB Nation site, covering the Volunteers. Thank you, Terry, for your insight and your explanation of what's going on down there. I really do truly appreciate it. The entire country is watching, so I hope things get done right.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it. All right. It's 3:58. We got a top of the hour Sports Center coming up, and you know what else I need to remind you about? You wouldn't believe it to walk outside today because it's so beautiful, but believe me, the cold weather is coming. In Northwest Ohio, it's unavoidable. So what's that mean to you? Means it's time for the remote car starter you've been wanting from Car Stereo One. Stop in and ask about starting your car with your smartphone and with no monthly fee. Talk about the perfect Christmas gift if you want to give it to someone you love or warm the backside of someone special or maybe your own with a custom installed seat heater. Just $129 now at Car Stereo One. How about Bluetooth streaming audio and a DVD movie screen from our friends at Pioneer? Not $300. Not $200, just $156 now at Car Stereo One. You could also choose full car window tinting for just $149. Car Stereo One, the best remote car starters and the lowest prices. Need directions? Log on to carstereo1.com. All right, let's get to that Sports Center top of the hour update that we'll have from Cushlin. And on the other side, I want to open up the phone lines to you on this Tennessee story. I will let you hear from Urban Meyer, who spoke today on the Greg Schiano situation. This is his guy. It's his assistant head coach and defensive coordinator. So I'm going to let you hear from Urban Meyer, get some of your calls, and then at 4:35 we'll shift gears to the NBA. The Pistons, with a big win over the Eastern Conference's top team thus far, the Boston Celtics, David Fernandez of Detroit Bad Boys will join us. All part of the next hour of the Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Bumps inside to Andre after he set a nice screen for Avery Bradley. Avery Bradley in a hurry, lobs to Andre, brings it down, flips it up, and scores it. Nice job by Andre Drummond. Reggie lobs, Andre finishes.
Andre is so active.
Bradley inside for Andre, another jam for the Piston big man. Unstoppable, really. Pistons with numbers. Avery Bradley, alley-oops to Andre for a dynamite dunk.
Woo, woo, woo.
And Andre with a step in front, steal, the drive and the dunk. Play of the game, folks.
Since Tobias, he's got Kyrie Irving on him inside. Takes it to the lane, sends it, and scores it.
Tobias turns the corner and jams.
Oh, my goodness, did he ever.
Let him have it, and he hit it. Tobias Harris is rolling, folks.
You know, tonight was just an overall great win for all of us. Tobias had a great night. Avery coming back home to Boston and getting a win here the way we did was huge. We let them know that we're here. We're not going to lay down. When every time they went on a run, you know, we locked back in again. You know, to see Stan actually smile for once is... That is a very, very uptight guy. You know, he overthinks a lot. You know, he's wants to win really bad. So for us to have this type of success and give him a peace of mind so he can actually relax and not cuss us out every 10 minutes. So it's definitely good that we're playing this well.
LeBron sends it. Knocks it down. Get out of his way. LeBron giving some space. Drains it for three. He continues his assault. Three. Takes the young man downstairs into the office for two, like stealing. Here comes Wade, steps in a long one, and cashed it in for three. D. Wade. LeBron James, one on one now, turns inside Covington with the left hand. LeBron sends it. Chased it down, knew it was off, sends it. Just like he planned, that wily veteran. A one-angle winner. Another decisive performance for the Cavaliers.
I mentioned the phenomenal special on the streak we had. You know, when they made a run at the starters, our bench came in, pushed the lead back up. Bodies are moving. Again, great shots. Nobody feels like they got to try to take over on their own. It's just a collective effort, man. But I said our bench has been phenomenal, and that's part of the reason why we've turned this early season around.
I wasn't there, nor were you guys. I took Dan Wetzel. He covered this, and he basically said, you know what? If there was any evidence whatsoever that Greg Schiano knew anything about this, I would bury him. I don't know Greg Schiano. I've never met Greg Schiano. I trust Dan West. And for everybody in Tennessee, everybody connected to the Tennessee program, from the AD all the way down, to not have a backbone, to not have a spine, to stick by a guy that they chose. You chose Greg Schiano. And then you allowed the fans and the shock jocks and the other people to make you change your decision. What kind of spineless, no backbone thing is that? Tennessee is a program that I thought had a lot of tradition. It's a program that I thought stood for something.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two underway now, 13 minutes after 4 o'clock. We're going to take you for another, let me do the math here, 47 minutes of outstanding awesome. Take it up until drive time with Mike Miller. So stay right here for the rest of the afternoon and evening on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket. Really good conversation coming up, or excuse me, that we just had with Terry Lambert from RockyTopTalk.com down there in Tennessee. And another good conversation coming up at about 4:35, 4:40, somewhere in that neighborhood, with David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com. As we talk about the Pistons' big win over the Celtics last night, you heard a lot of that in the montage. Also talk about the rest of the NBA with David as the Cavaliers keep rolling along. You heard that in the montage as well. Eight straight wins for the Cavs after their very early season struggles. And Derrick Rose situation hanging over their heads. We'll get into that with David Fernandez. But for now, I want to go back to what we were just talking about with the University of Tennessee and the debacle. And it really was a debacle. Of the hiring, the courting, the offer, the memorandum of understanding, et cetera, to Greg Schiano. It's just, it's really, I'm trying to remember what Pat Ford called it. Let me see if I can find it here, just real quick, or Pat 40. I've heard people pronounce it 40. I think, I don't know if that's right or not. But he described this situation in which they were going to hire, They were going to hire Greg Schiano, and then they decided not to because of the protest. The abject tire fire lynch mob fiasco debacle at Tennessee. That's what Pat Forty called it from Yahoo Sports. The abject tire fire lynch mob fiasco debacle at Tennessee. And he, I quoted him when I talked to Terry Lambert about this. He essentially said, quote, to the Tennessee fans and those who are responsible for this mess, you people are ridiculous. Not all of you, but the delusional loudmouths who somehow think a program with a 62-63 record over the last decade is too good for Greg Schiano. The internet vigilantes who want to bully their way into running the school's coaching search. The piling on politicians, the protesters, the rock painters, and the rubes who are still waiting for John Gruden to slide down the chimney. But the worst among, writes Pat Forty, the worst among the Tennessee lunatic fringe are the disingenuous liars who say this Schiano backlash is about Mike McQueary's testimony regarding Jerry Sandusky and things that happened at Penn State, when in reality, it's because they don't think Schiano is going to win an SEC title. Don't go getting righteously indignant when this has nothing to do with being righteous and everything to do with trying to beat Georgia. That's Pat Forty's statement, and it's a strong one, almost as strong as the one made by Burger McFarland. Now, you heard a little piece of that. I'll go back to him in a second. You just heard a little short clip of that during the montage put together by Cushlin, but I want to share with you, before I do that, just 30 seconds, of Urban Meyer. Because Urban Meyer is right now essentially Greg Schiano's boss. He doesn't pay him, but he's the assistant head coach, so he works very closely with Greg Schiano, does Urban Meyer. He is Schiano is the assistant head coach and defensive coordinator for the extraordinarily successful Buckeyes, has been since last season. This is his second year. And Urban Meyer was asked at his press conference about the Schiano situation earlier yesterday. I want you to give this a listen. Doggone it. Hold on 1 second here. Hold on. Quick glitch. Let me push that button and then that button and a little crackle of electricity, a little smell of sulfur, and away we go.
Front row middle, Dave.
Urban, this Greg Schiano situation is so incredibly unusual with this mob kind of coming at him, Tennessee rescinding the offer. I'm just curious, what are your emotions regarding that? Are you angry about this? Just what's your take on all of this?
No, I'm not angry. I'll make this comment that I apologize. I've said it many times. He's an elite person, elite father, elite husband, elite friend, and elite football coach. I stand by my coach, and I just don't know enough, and it's not fair to my players to make any more comments than that, because we have a huge game this week.
That's an understatement. Obviously, they do have a huge game, but the part that you should take away from Urban Meyer there, he's an elite person, an elite father, an elite husband, an elite friend, and an elite football coach. That's some pretty strong backing. When you've got the backing of somebody like Urban Meyer, when you've got the backing of somebody like Bill Belichick, it does seem to carry a little bit of weight. They endorse not only his coaching ability, but his character as well. And that is very important to make note of. Now, I want to go back to Booger McFarland for a moment. He literally kind of launched, blessed, if you will, christened, the new ESPN morning show, Golic and Wingo, of course, replacing Mike and Mike, yesterday. when he was asked about this. Now, you know, Booger McFarland has an awful lot of SEC ties. He, of course, is a graduate of LSU. And he was asked about Tennessee and their fans and everything that was done by Tennessee and to Greg Schiano in this mess. So I'm going to give you the full two-minute clip here. You heard about 25 seconds of it before. I want you to hear the full thing, and then we'll get your response to it. 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065, the number to join us. And we'll get you up and on the radio. Here's Booger.
As far as Tennessee is concerned, guys, it's the most disheartening thing I've ever seen. I'm not a journalist. What I am is an analyst. And as far as the journalistic side of what happened with Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky and that whole deal, Dan Wetzel is a guy who I think is one of the better journalists in America. I'll put him up against anybody. I wasn't there, nor were you guys. I trust Dan Wetzel. He covered this, and he basically said, you know what? If there was any evidence whatsoever that Greg Schiano knew anything about this, I would bury him. I don't know Greg Schiano. I've never met Greg Schiano. I trust Dan Wetzel. And for everybody in Tennessee, everybody connected to the Tennessee program, from the AD all the way down, to not have a backbone, to not have a spine, to stick by a guy that they chose. I don't care who was behind choosing him, whether it was the biggest booster or whatever. You chose Greg Schiano. And then you allowed the fans and the shock jocks and the other people to make you change your decision. What kind of spineless, no backbone thing is that? Tennessee is a program that I thought had a lot of tradition. It's a program that I thought stood for something. And you know what? It very well may be that at some point. But right now, they look bad. John Curry, the AD, he looks terrible right now. It's a shame. It's a travesty. I don't know Greg Schiano personally, but what I do know is Bill Belichick has vouched for him. Okay? Urban Meyer has vouched for him. He's coached the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a professional organization. So many people have vouched for Greg Schiano. Now, all of a sudden, Tennessee is too holy that they don't want Greg Schiano? Who the hell does Tennessee think they are right now? And I think they're disillusional, and I think they're ultimately going to pay the price for it. So the whole Tennessee deal just really drives me crazy about everything that's going on in Knoxville right now.
That, again, was Booger McFarland yesterday on Golic and Wingo, yesterday morning on the debut show of the new morning show, Golic and Wingo. And I could not say it any better. Tennessee is spineless. Their leadership should all be changed. And what's weird, here's a weird little ironic twist, I guess, if you will, on this. People on both sides of this aisle agree that the leadership should go. The athletic director, Curry, perhaps the school president, anybody else involved with this, and here's why. Those who hate Schiano and are indeed riding this "we deserve a better coach" wave, or he's not a man of good character because we think he was involved in the Sandusky thing with no evidence whatsoever, they want the leadership fired simply for considering this man. Then there's my side, where I think this man deserves an extraordinarily sincere apology from Tennessee because of what they have done, and those who are destroying his character, killing any potential he might have for future jobs by trying to paint him as some sort of a complicit partner in this Jerry Sandusky horror story from Penn State from years ago. I think they should, the leadership should be fired for caving into the mob. They caved into the mob and took away the opportunity this guy had, essentially saying, okay, we agree with the mob. We are rubber stamping the mob's opinion. We agree with what The Rock on campus says, that it says he protects child rapists. By firing or not agreeing to hire him and by pulling that memorandum of understanding away, they are essentially rubber stamping it and saying, okay, we agree. Bad idea by us. So to me, they ought to be fired for caving in and having no backbone, as Booger said. To those who don't want Schiano, they want the administration fired for not for even considering Schiano in the first place. Want to get your thoughts on this at 866-240-1065. And as always, it seems like we start with Jimmy, who is in Toledo, now on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Jimmy, what's going on, man?
Hey, listen, as we've talked before, there's kind of like a movement in the country, like a war on testosterone and masculinity, and it's mostly sprang up, the laboratories of this are pretty much on campus, our campuses and colleges. And, truthfully, if you're looking for a lot of backbone at those places, you're going to be, you know, sorely disappointed.
Agreed.
So it's no shock of what happened there. That's the home of political correctness and fake moral outrage. You know, they create a whole lot of that. Just go look at what happened at Missouri.
I was just about to say the same exact thing to you. When you want to look at fake moral outrage, that's what exactly what happened in Missouri.
Exactamundo. It's the playbook. They ran it on Schiano. No evidence, just allegations, just garbage. But anyways, I got the distinctive...
Not to relitigate it or whatever, but it's not even a legitimate allegation. It's a I heard from another guy who heard from another guy that Schiano saw this.
Right.
And it was so uncredible, not incredible, but uncredible, non-credible, that the Free Report didn't even mention his name because he was such a non-factor in any of this. It was not even close to being something that was part of part of the cover-up. So to me,
he would have been a graduate assistant, so he was relatively a nobody at the time.
Exactly.
So he wasn't Greg Schiano, head coach, you know.
Right.
He was a graduate assistant. He was relatively nobody. I mean, 27 years, I mean, what, 1990-ish? So, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's par for the course. I think, what comes to mind is Duke Lacrosse. It's the exact same thing. Or the Virginia rape case down there where, you know, Rolling Stone wind up. It was completely fabricated. And you see college administrators react the same way. It's just an absolute pattern. It happens all the time. But in this case, we're all aware of it because it happened to somebody that, you know, we all know here, you know, in our sphere of interest. And I guess Greg's just going to hang around long enough to maybe when Urban hangs it up. I don't know. But I would like to think that a man like him will get an opportunity somewhere down the line, because I think maybe at some point, this kind of garbage is, there's going to be a backlash to it. People are going to start seeing the writing on the wall.
If I may, Jimmy, that's where I disagree. I feel like he's been poisoned. The well water's been poisoned on Greg Schiano. I don't care if it's Middle Tennessee State, let alone the University of Tennessee. Pick some smaller, you know, mid-major university. There, as soon as he's offered a job, everything that happened during this Tennessee little courting period is going to be brought back up, and people are going to be asking every administrator, why are you okay with giving the benefit of the doubt to somebody who may have, even if they acknowledge double hearsay, who may have helped cover up Jerry Sandusky's child rapes?
Well, here's the thing, Bob.
Something that will just be toxic, and no one will want to be a part of answering.
Here's the thing, but here's the thing, Bob. And this is probably what struck me is the fellow that you had on was very nice, and you handled him very respectfully. But you get the impression that the people down there at Tennessee are really kind of self-deluded with how important their program is perceived by everyone else, because they're really not what they think they are anymore. And after this, they're really not. And I got to tell you, they're going to be like kind of exhibit number one on how not to handle a hire. And if somebody out there, you know, believe me, there are qualified ADs out there that know that Greg Schiano is a damn good football coach and that none of this stuff has passed his muster. Otherwise, Urban Meyer and Gene Smith wouldn't have hired him.
That's what I was just about to say.
And they will anticipate this if they really want Schiano, because he will be a football coach someday. And the fact is, they will anticipate all these kind of goofy questions, and they will be out in front of it with a professional operation to stymie this the minute it comes up, and it's very easy. I mean, just the job that you did in 2 minutes would have put all of this to bed. But like the gentleman said, these people were more bent out of shape because, God forbid, they didn't get John Gruden. Right. You know, and that's what it is. And then, like you said, the inmates were literally running the asylum, and it just kind of took on a life of its own.
I want to speak more to what you said about Ohio State. And, Jimmy, thanks for the call, my friend.
Yep.
Appreciate it. To suggest that Tennessee was ready and willing to hire, and to condemn them for being ready and willing to hire somebody that may have a cloud of suspicion over them in one of the most horrific cases that college sports has ever seen, and quite frankly, that humanity could ever see, the systemic ongoing years of abuse of young boys. To suggest that Tennessee should be castigated for considering him, which is what many are doing, including elected officials from Tennessee. How could the university even think about this, Bubba? Is to say that Ohio State did hire somebody with a cloud of suspicion. It's to say that Urban Meyer and Gene Smith and the entire crew at Ohio State and the administration, all of their investigators, et cetera, you know, that they dropped the ball. They somehow let Greg Schiano onto their payroll to be the assistant head coach and be in a position of authority and influence over young men. Oh, my God. How could, that's what they're saying right now. Where are all of these national writers who are screaming? Well, not just writers, but, you know, Twitter and you know, the lynch mob, if you will, that Pat Forty talked about. Where are they when it comes to ripping Ohio State? If they're going to tear Tennessee limb from limb, why aren't they trying to tear Greg or Urban Meyer down for hiring Greg Schiano, for having him as the assistant head coach and defensive coordinator? I mean, after all, if he did the things that they're talking about, or even if it's potentially, you know, remotely possible that he did what they're talking about, then they're saying that Ohio State either did not vet him and should be torn apart for that, or did vet him, and we're okay with that. We're okay with letting somebody who was complicit or might have been complicit in covering up child rape, et cetera, you know, get under their payroll. So that's a big leap. And that's one of the reasons why I just don't know. I mean, maybe Jimmy's right. Maybe somebody who wants to hire him will put together a perfect, you know, they'll hire the best PR crew that is available. You know, they'll put a publicist on the case and really put out a massive media presentation from one end of the country to the other, saying this is who we're hiring and here's why, this is the homework we did, this is what we know, and this is why he's the right man for the job, and this is why all of those allegations and rumors are just that, if not, you know, less than that, and this is why. Maybe they'll get somebody to do that, but until somebody is ready to commit to that, he's going to be stuck in limbo. He's going to be stuck as a coordinator, and maybe that's a good thing for Ohio State. Maybe, as Jimmy said, he hangs around and waits for Urban to retire or move on, and then he can take over, because Ohio State doesn't have to, at that point, put on a big dog and pony show saying why he's the guy. He's already theirs. They've already said that. But I just don't know that there will be a media team and a PR staff and a publicist crew put together to justify this hire, unless it's somebody like John Gruden, unless it's somebody like Bill Belichick, where it's, we have to have this guy. Otherwise, people are going to say, you know, his record is mediocre. He'd be washed out of the National Football League. Why would we put in the trouble and effort for a guy like that? Nick is in Bowling Green. Nick, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Thanks for your patience, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, you know, we're talking about Urban Meyer's integrity.
Yes.
Did he hire an offensive coordinator also that's in a little bit of trouble with helping covering up doctor records for injuries? And didn't he have a lot of problems in Florida with cover-up?
I don't recall the specifics of what you're talking about. You're talking about an offense coordinator in Florida or at Florida?
No, in Ohio State, the one from Indiana. He was in a little bit of trouble, too. There's players suing him over injuries that he was helping covering up with the doctor. That's why he got fired there. So how can we take his word on this? And one other question.
Well, first of all, if I may, as I pointed out before, you know, a head coach at a university like Ohio State doesn't get to say, that's the guy I want, hire him. Without the athletic department and the administration doing the necessary requisite background checks and vetting and making sure that this is okay. Now, if there's any benefit of the doubt, they will, of course, defer to the head coach. Okay, if this is the guy you say you want, and this is, you know, if there's a coin flip of whether or not this is a good thing or a bad thing or not, we'll let you have the final decision. But they would not have greenlit at Ohio State University. They would not have greenlit somebody who was of questionable character in such a way without doing their homework, I don't believe.
I mean, but that's what Indiana fired him over that. So I was just wondering about the integrity of Myers, or more about winning.
Yeah, well, again, you know, you can question. Well, first of all, Urban Meyer is going to pick the best football coaches. It is going to be up to somebody else, however, to do all of that background checking to make sure that he fits in with the rest of the, you know, the mission of the university, and that is that he is of the highest character, et cetera. So I get your point, and you're right about Beck and what happened in Indiana, but to me, I don't think you can put that all on Meyer. That would be a university decision.
I mean, we know in the end, though, Meyer runs. I mean, they're not getting – I mean, he picks, and they're hiring who he wants. And then it's Greg Schiano. How long was he at Penn State? I mean, he had to know something. Every other coach there knew something. I'm not saying he's part of it or anything like that, but these guys would not put the effort forward to put their name on the line to save these kids.
I mean, the secret was extraordinary. I think you're being extraordinarily dangerous here. You're tiptoeing the line of slander. What do you mean he had to know something? All of the other coaches knew something. That has been no way in any way, near shape or form, proven that
every coach knew something.
The coaches that knew something were the coaches that ended up getting fired, including Joe Paterno. Guys, I mean, you know there was an exhaustive.
But they didn't get fired until it came out. This went on for 20 years.
What's that?
This went on for 20 years before anybody got fired. And then the son knew about it too. He said he walked in on it. I'm just saying, all them years that you're telling me that he didn't know. I'm not saying he had any part or anything else, but the word was around through all the coaching staff.
I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong, and I think you're being very, very dangerous there, Nick. I appreciate the call. I got to run to get to a David Fernandez. But I think you're in some dangerous territory there by saying that all of the coaches knew. It was all the coaching staff knew. No, I don't believe that, especially young graduate assistants like Shiano at the time. I don't believe that at all. I believe that the true fault of all of this, outside of the actual perpetrator of the terrible crimes, Jerry Sandusky, is the head coach, who, I promise you, when McQuarrie came to him and finally told him this, I promise you, he told McQuarrie, tell no one else. Keep this quiet. I'm not going to do this. He called whoever was the athletic director and then just never followed up on it and let it be buried. He wanted it buried, and because of that, the other coaches did not know. If you look at the list of people who went down in that situation, that free report was the result of an exhaustive investigation. And if there had been somebody else to tear down, they would have torn them down. If there was somebody else to hold accountable for a cover-up, they would have. Think about this. If they were willing to tear down the institution at Penn State that Joe Paterno himself was, take down the statue, fire him, vacate the wins, all of the stuff that went on, if they were willing to tear Joe Paterno down because they could prove he knew something, what would have stopped them from tearing down a grad assistant like Greg Schiano? If anybody, any other assistant on that staff knew anything that they could prove at all, they would have nailed them. If they're willing to nail the boss, if they're willing to ruin the career and ultimately, I think, probably lead to the end of the life of Joe Paterno over this, which, by the way, they did the right thing, because I think Joe Paterno was as guilty as the day is long of covering this up. I'm not defending Paterno. My point is, though, if they're willing to tear down the institution that is Penn State University, that is Joe Paterno, they wouldn't have blinked at tearing down some nobody assistant coach saying he knew about it and didn't say anything either. They would have ruined all of those guys, but they didn't, and that's why I believe it's absolutely a travesty what is being done right now to Greg Schiano. All right, so you've got hockey on your phone and basketball on your tablet and football on your TV, and you're trying to watch them all. You're going to go cross-eyed, and you're going to get a crick in your neck from going back and forth. Stop settling for a bad time at home watching all the games and watch them on big, beautiful screens all lined up side by side at Buffalo Wild Wings. That's right. You can also choose from over a dozen draft beers on tap while you're watching, and 21 signature sauces and seasonings, as well as your favorite seat at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Speaking of sports, we're going to get a Sports Center, local Sports Center update from Jim Cushion. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about something a little bit easier, and that is games. Pistons had themselves one. Andre Drummond particularly had himself one last night against the Celtics. And David Fernandez of DetroitBadBoys.com joins us next right here on The Ticket.
Back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know, tonight was just an overall great win for all of us. Tobias had a great night. Avery coming back home to Boston and getting a win here the way we did was huge. We let them know that we're here. We're not going to lay down. When every time they went on the run, you know, we locked back in again. You know, to see Stan actually smile for once is, I mean, that is a very, very uptight guy. You know, he overthinks a lot. You know, he's wants to win really bad. So for us to have this type of success and give him a peace of mind so he can actually relax and not cuss us out every 10 minutes. So it's definitely good that we're playing this well.
It's 4:43. Tech glitches all worked out as we do continue. I told you I wanted to shift gears from the heavy, that is the Greg Schiano situation, to the much lighter Detroit Pistons thumping of the Boston Celtics last night. And joining us is David Fernandez, as promised, of DetroitBadBoys.com. Hey, David, how are you?
Doing well.
You're not doing as well as Andre Drummond. What has gotten into that big man?
I don't know. It's kind of an unreal sense to Washington. He's getting early season kind of accolades or talk about being possibly the NBA's most improved player this year, even though statistically he hasn't really skyrocketed other than in his assist rate or his assist for games and also his free throws. But he's just kind of playing with a man possessed right now.
Well, you know what he is? He's toying. He's playing with, you know, his opponents. I mean, it's amazing. We've seen big men do this kind of thing on occasion before, but, and I don't want to say he's doing it with regularity, but it's as close to frequency as I think you can say. When you're putting up numbers that he is like that with 20s and 20s, you know, 20-20 double-doubles, and even adding steals and assists and some other things like that.
And let me throw out, guys, that he's still shooting 62%. And let me throw out also, Drummond's still shooting 61.8% from the line right now.
Still up over, that's right, up over the 60 mark, which is remarkable for a 38% career guy. So he's toying with his opponents, and it's not in a, you know, in a cutesy-cutesy way, but, I mean, he just really does seem like he's playing like a man among boys. And while he has always had great rebounding numbers, and he's always had great potential to do more on the scoring side of things, I just think the leaps that he has taken from last year to this year, if you had to give an award a quarter of the way through the season for most improved player, it's going to be Andre Drummond.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. He's actually the first player in NBA history, at least when they started recording rebounding stats, to average or to grab 12-plus rebounds in his first 16 games. The previous record, I believe, was 12 by Kevin Love and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Wilt Chamberlain. So, you know, he already set a record earlier this year. I think what you're seeing a lot from Andre Drummond is like a new focus as well. He's not getting an early foul trouble and slumping his shoulders and all of a sudden leading to like a 6-10 game. He's kind of staying, you know, within his own head. He's playing, you know, smooth. He has a newfound confidence, and he's really playing a full, you know, 35, 36, 40 minutes, however many minutes is on the floor.
Yeah, you're right. He really is, and he's just kind of become, I don't know, can he be the face of this franchise? Is there one? See, what's weird about that is what makes the Pistons special, I think, and has them in first place, and, you know, the great start to the season they got, and they did hit a little snag, but what makes them successful is the fact that there isn't one guy. That everybody has that role. You and I have talked about this, David and Jim and I. We've all talked about everybody has their defined roles, understand, and they all know it, and everybody has a part to play, and there is no sacred cow on that roster. There is no prima donna who's better than everybody else. But having said that, you know, as good as Tobias Harris has been at times and Reggie has been at times, I mean, Andre Drummond, the workhorse, the blue-collar guy, I mean, he just seems to represent the city in the same way that some former bad boys used to.
And I actually was talking to someone from that covers the Celtics, and they were asking me whether or not Avery Bradley was kind of the voice in the locker room and the leader of the team. And not really. Like, he's more of like a lead by example guy, same with Tobias Harris. But, you know, this team still does really rely on, you know, Andre Drummond specifically, and also Chris Jackson close out games. Not that he played a very spectacular fourth quarter last night or anything like that, but generally speaking, those are still the two guys that they rely on in like an emotional type of standpoint, and also just like a true vocal team leader. So Andre, I think, is that guy, and I think this season he's really sort of taking the reins as the face of the franchise, as you said. And, you know, we have talked about it before. He's being paid like it, too. So I think he's really kind of living up to it, and really, you know, there's no more talks about trading away Andre Drummond and shipping away a draft pick with him. You know, the type of stuff that was being kind of murmured in NBA circles last year.
Yeah, we're talking to David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com, about the Pistons' Andre Drummond and the tremendous game he had last night, tremendous season he's having thus far. When the Cavaliers blew out the Pistons, a week and a half ago or however long it was, we talked about, is that more of a kind of, you know, an establishment of regular order? This is the way it's supposed to be, the defending champions, putting these upstart Pistons back in their place. But then we said, then again, it's a November basketball game. It might not mean much in the grand scheme. Take that same application now to last night. Celtics are the best team in the East so far. Pistons took them down badly, beat them by 10. Pistons have the second-best record in the East right now. Same question. Does it mean anything in the big picture, what we saw last night, or is this still just late November basketball? And by the way, come March, we will have forgotten about it. Come May, it will have been eons ago, and we won't even know that it ever happened.
I think it's fair to think about it. If, you know, the Celtics had played their third game in four nights. You know, they were clearly a little bit gassed, and as you heard in that audio bit from Andre Drummond, you know, they were more so making late night, or sorry, pushes. They were going on little runs where Marcus Smart would hit back-to-back threes and all of a sudden cut the lead or even take the lead. So, you know, they weren't necessarily, I could tell that they were running out of steam, and come the fourth quarter, the Pistons really laid it on them and kind of ran away with that game. But I do think that there is applications to this one, mainly because the Pistons do really possess, you know, they have talent on their roster that can cause the Celtics trouble over the course of the seven-game series. Andre Drummond will always be a handle for Al Horford and Aaron Bain. Kyrie Irving is going to be, you know, he probably does not want to see Avery Bradley over another seven-game series. So, you know, there are actual elements to this game and things that you can read into this game that will have larger implications down the road.
We're talking to David Fernandez, DetroitBadBoys.com. That's an SB Nation Piston site, as you know by now. Jim Cushing's got one for you, David.
You know, we're hung up for understandable reasons on the incredible night last night from Andre Drummond in this one, but I'm also reminded how important Tobias Harris is to this whole equation. He goes out and he led everybody with 31, also grabbed 8 rebounds. I've been really liking him as a player, especially since he came over from Orlando. He felt like, to me, when he was with the Magic, kind of a forgotten guy on a horrible type of team, and he's really come into his own, I think, since he was acquired by the Pistons. Talk to me about his importance, because, you know, as we know, it's a team, and I think they're more of a team, as Bob was saying, than a lot of these other star-laden teams out there, but it's not just Drummond, and I think Tobias Harris is a giant key to this whole thing.
Every NBA team needs a guy that can get a bucket, you know, that can kind of just take the ball and get a bucket. You know, whether that be, you saw it quite a bit last night. Tobias Harris would have, you know, Kyrie Irving on him in the post or Marcus Smart on him in the post. He would pull him and just get a bucket. He's really improved his 3-point shooting, which has helped Pistons offense in general. It really helps with the spacing. He's letting it fly early too. He's not hesitating at all. He's putting up, I think, let's see here, he's putting up, 6.1 threes a game.
David, unfortunately, we're having a cell problem here. Your phone is breaking up on us, and we're not able to hear anything. I think after you said 6.1 threes a game. Let's try that again and see if you can repeat that.
Yeah, so he's really just amplified his 3-point shooting as well. I think, you know, holistically speaking, Tobias Harris is just an offensive, just a toolkit. He's a Swiss Army man. So the Pistons did really need someone to kind of step up into their own. And Tobias has really done that so far this year, and it's really helped out the whole entire Pistons office, not just his numbers.
Hey, David, I hate to do this to you, and I certainly know it's not your fault. It's technology that sometimes isn't very reliable because we're just getting so much static and breakup. I'm going to have to cut this short here. I appreciate it, and we're going to talk to you again soon, obviously, about the next Pistons game. In fact, let's book that now, but we need to cut out of that because the static was just so bad. I'm sure it's annoying people's ears. Through the radio. So apologies for that. We'll get David Fernandez back on another time. And Jim Cushlin, to his point, and to your point, since you brought up Tobias Harris,
yeah.
Had it not been for 26 and 22, which is what Drummond did, what would we be talking about in this game? We'd be talking about the explosion of
right.
Tobias Harris, who's 31, came on 10 out of 16 shooting and 5 out of 6 from 3. So everything he just said about, and he started talking about how Tobias Harris is just kind of an offensive Swiss Army knife. He can beat you in a lot of different ways, and he's proving to be maybe not, you know, the most complete, well-rounded player in the league, but when it comes to offensive ability, he's got a lot of it.
Yeah, he absolutely does. And what David was trying to say before his phone really cut out on us there was you'd need that guy. I mean, every team has that guy. How often in NBA circles have you always said, well, you know, somebody's got to average 20 points, even on a team that loses 65 games, because that's just how the NBA works. But it's more than that. When he gets on a roll, like he was last night, at one point he made, like, 3 or 4 threes in a row. When those things happen, it opens things up for a lot of other guys. And, you know, Drummond had such a great game, as we know. Reggie Jackson was, you know, over 20 points in this one. But I really think the way this team operates on offense, Tobias Harris, when he's making shots last night, really helps tie it
well,
all together.
He's that goat to also remind everybody what David just said. He's the guy that, you know, not only, well, you got to have somebody who averages 20 points, that I need a bucket right now. Who do I go to?
Yes.
And he's the
Pistons,
he's the go-to bucket guy right now.
Yes.
Even though last night Andre Drummond was 10 out of 12, you'd think, get it downloaded, the big man, he can't miss. That's harder to do, obviously. When you need a created bucket, not somebody to create for you and find you down on the post, you need a creator. And that's something that Tobias Harris has been proving to be. And
absolutely.
By the way, for the Celtics, just in case you're wondering, Kyrie Irving, 6 out of 16 on the way to 18 points. He was just 1 of 6 from 3. Kush, probably the result of some tired legs when you play 3 and 4 nights. That's the kind of thing where, you know, you just don't have the lift on your shot and everything comes up a little short.
Yeah.
And you realize it, so you try to compensate for it. Now you're a little long, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why you had a little bit of a rougher night.
Yeah, you're going to have that. That's why the NBA is cutting down those schedules. Incidentally, side note, Bob, for you and me, I'd watch for that kind of thing tonight with the Cavs as they're on the second night of a back-to-back.
Good point indeed. Hey, Jim, I know we pivoted from the Tennessee story to the NBA story, and I want to pivot back on our way out the door now. Because for anybody who did not hear, I think this is a great summary, kind of an encapsulation, if you will, of the Greg Schiano almost got hired away from Ohio State as the assistant head coach and defensive coordinator under Urban Meyer to be the next head coach at the University of Tennessee. That offer to hire him was rescinded by the University of Tennessee after the protests broke out. And I just find it despicable, deplorable, what was done to Greg Schiano. And Booger McFarland, ESPN commentator, was on what used to be Mike and Mike, which is now Golic and Wingo.
It's going to take me
morning.
A while to get used
I know,
to say that,
I
too.
I almost said it. Blasting it. And I thought his, in my opinion, Booger's 2.5-minute rant here summarizes the situation as well as anybody can. So for those who missed this earlier in the show, I want to leave you with Booger McFarland.
As far as Tennessee is concerned, guys, it's the most disheartening thing I've ever seen. I'm not a journalist. What I am is an analyst. And as far as the journalistic side of what happened with Joe Paterno and Jerry Sandusky and that whole deal, Dan Wetzel is a guy who I think is one of the better journalists in America. I'll put him up against anybody. I wasn't there, nor were you guys. I trust Dan Wetzel. He covered this, and he basically said, you know what? If there was any evidence whatsoever that Greg Schiano knew anything about this, I would bury him. I don't know Greg Schiano. I've never met Greg Schiano. I trust Dan Wetzel. And for everybody in Tennessee, everybody connected to the Tennessee program, from the AD all the way down, to not have a backbone, to not have a spine, to stick by a guy that they chose. I don't care who was behind choosing him, whether it was the biggest booster or whatever. You chose Greg Schiano. And then you allow the fans and the shock jocks and the other people to make you change your decision. What kind of spineless, no backbone thing is that? Tennessee is a program that I thought had a lot of tradition. It's a program that I thought stood for something. And you know what? It very well may be that at some point. But right now, they look bad. John Curry, the AD, he looks terrible right now. It's a shame. It's a travesty. I don't know Greg Schiano personally, but what I do know is Bill Belichick has vouched for him, okay? Urban Meyer has vouched for him. He's coached the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as a professional organization. So many people have vouched for Greg Schiano. Now, all of a sudden, Tennessee is too holy that they don't want Greg Schiano? Who the hell does Tennessee think they are right now? And I think they're disillusional, and I think they're ultimately going to pay the price for it. So the whole Tennessee deal just really drives me crazy about everything that's going on in Knoxville right now.